It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Listen to me, I'm older and I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
You got through it, got through that Monday, and it is the Sports Rush taking you home, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up this hour, Scott Agnes from the Fieldhouse Files to talk Pacers basketball. Pacers, well, they did a great job of getting behind, and then after the play, comeback basketball in the second half, just not enough to overcome what was at one point close to a 40-point deficit. And the Pacers end up losing it 109-94. They were down by 27 at the half, 69-42. On the bright side, I guess if you want to be Mr. Optimist, you could say the Pacers played pretty well and figured out the formula in the second half, but they've got a lot of things they've got to improve. First of all, offensively, they've got to be better, and they've got to get contributions from Tyrese Halliburton. You can't have another 9-point night from Halliburton. He's a 20-point-per-game scorer. He needs to be that or more, or this series is not going to go very far.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is that he shot well from the floor. He was 4 of 7, so it just makes you kind of wonder, did they just – I mean, I didn't see every minute of the game, but I'm sure that he had the opportunity to take more than 7 shots.
Yeah, and you've got to get him more. I mean, if he can't get them on his own, you've got to create, because he has to be more involved on the offensive side. And then you had – kind of a questionable stretch with McDermott and Shepherd getting minutes. I mean, you know, you saw McDermott play 7 minutes. Shepherd got out there for 9. Generally, you have a short bench for the playoffs. If you look at Milwaukee, they basically played 8 men, had Green in there for 6 minutes. But the Pacers, McDermott played 7 minutes. Isaiah Jackson had a couple of minutes on the court, 9 minutes from Shepherd, Ben Shepherd. And Shepherd, in his 9 minutes, was 1 for 5 from the field. Want to talk about a guy who wasn't afraid to launch? You know, Halliburton, who's supposed to be the guy shooting and scoring, gets 7 shots in 38 minutes. Ben Shepherd comes in apparently thinking he's instant offense. He shoots 5 times in 9 minutes, and he was 1 for 4 from behind the arc.
Yeah, that's not the way things should be run offensively. I also was not very impressed with Obi Toppin's contributions off the bench. I know he didn't get a lot of minutes, but
no, I mean he's one of those that backs up Siakam, and Siakam was so good it made it tough to find a place to put Toppin. But if you look at the bench, Adam, there wasn't much in any form contributed. I mean, McConnell got 10 points, but he was 5 for 13, 0 for 3 from distance. Just looking at the bench from the three-point line, that make by Ben Shepherd, the only three-point make they had, they ended up 1 for 13 as a unit, the backup unit, from beyond the three-point line. So
and it just makes you wonder, why does T.J. McConnell have 6 more field goal attempts than Tyrese Halliburton?
Yeah, in half the minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, there's things that are going to have to change. I mean, you look at the players that got more field goal attempts than Tyrese. Naismith, Nembhard, Toppin, McConnell. I mean, all those guys got more shots. And, of course, Siakam, who finished 15 of 25, led the Pacers with 36 points and 13 rebounds, including 5 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, great night for Siakam. Just need the rest of the team to show up.
So with the NFL draft coming up, we were talking about the Colts and their decisions. Did Chris Ballard tip his plans at Friday's press conference? He made a couple of comments that were somewhat intriguing, maybe revealing, maybe not. You know, the real art of being a creative and clever general manager at this time of year is to be able to say something that everybody takes as fact, or that maybe you slipped up and let something leak out of the bag when, in fact, you're trying to get that impression across. In other words, you might try to say something that sounds very genuine, but it's a smokescreen for something else. But I do think there were a couple of things. I do think he was honest when he assessed the draft, because he was accurate in, number one, the draft is very strong in wide receivers. It's a deep draft, and he said, I think there's going to be some really talented players available at that position in the middle rounds, and I think it's very possible. But it's not going to be the guy that creates a difference for Anthony Richardson, and it's not the kind of guy that has the potential to be a future star in the league. It's a guy that's serviceable and provides some depth at that position. So don't use that as an excuse as to why you're not going to be aggressive and go up and get one of the talented wide receivers in this year's draft. Because the other opportunity you've got is perhaps to get a guy that would normally be drafted third or fourth in a regular draft, and he might fall to number 9 or 10, maybe even 11 in this year's draft because of the quarterbacks that are in this draft. And so, but he made two comments, talked about how strong this draft was in offensive linemen. Oh, Chris, please get over your affair with offensive linemen. We understand you might need a depth piece, so maybe a fourth or fifth round or somebody later in the draft. But let's not get all excited about picking a guy up early in the first or second round when you've got glaring needs at a couple of other positions. So here, ideally, by position, not by name, is what I'd like to see out of the Colts in this draft. First round, I would like to see the Colts trade up and get a wide receiver. That's pretty obvious if you've been listening for the last 20 minutes. I'd like to see them get one of the big three out of this draft. They probably will have to trade up to do it, but I do think it's worth making the move, giving up the picks. And so in the second round, they wouldn't have a pick because they'd have traded it to get a better first round selection. In the third round, I think they should look at the corners that are still available. I do think they need to upgrade that position. And if you can find a good corner, I think you can make that pick in the third round. Fourth round, maybe you look at another wide receiver just to add some depth, especially a guy that might be a possession guy where you could get a backup for Michael Pittman Jr. should something happen to Michael Pittman Jr. or you need him to take a break. Fifth round, then you can go for that linebacker or offensive lineman. For a linebacker, it's going to be a guy that's maybe fourth on your roster. For a outside linebacker or for a offensive lineman, you're probably looking at a guy that would be a backup either on the interior or if you can find a backup at offensive tackle. But I think there will be someone available, especially if Chris Ballard believes that there's some talent in the middle rounds at that position. I'd say fine, use it in the fifth and get a guy, either linebacker or offensive lineman. Sixth round, I would look at safety. I think that if there's a safety on the board that you think has a shot to make the team, go ahead and take your safety in the sixth round. And seventh round, I don't think it even matters. Take whatever you have as the best player still on the board, and I'm not even going to pick a position because it just totally depends on who that player might be. At that point, nobody knows any of these guys. They're not household names, so whatever he decides to do in the seventh round, I'll just roll with because it's probably not a guy who's going to be a big impact on the team anyway. Might be a special teams guy if you're lucky, and that's if you're lucky. So I would go first round, trade up wide receiver. Second round, trade the pick. Third round, corner. Fourth round, wide receiver. Fifth round, maybe a linebacker or offensive lineman. Sixth round, safety. Seventh round, pick the best that's still available on the board.
I like it. I think that sounds pretty ideal to me. I agree that it's just time to get a quarterback like Anthony Richardson, a deep field, deep threat weapon.
Got to go weapons. And if you're not going to do it in free agency, let's start getting the best guys we can get out of the draft. You know, in a free agent that was probably a top five or top 10 pick in the draft. Is probably going for $20 million a year right now. Mm. If you don't want to spend the $20 million, get the rookie contract and find a guy who's got that same kind of talent, maybe not the experience, but has the same kind of talent that you can put out there at a fraction of that money. That would be my thought process, because he clearly doesn't want to spend the money to pay Pittman on one side and then pay a free agent on the other. So this is your chance to get a guy. Remember, Pittman was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And so this would be a chance to maybe even get a number one wide receiver. For those that debate whether Michael Pittman's truly a number one, I don't even know if he's a number one, because I think a number one guy is a playmaker. I think he's a very solid, reliable guy, and I think he's valuable to a rookie quarterback. But I don't know that Michael Pittman can be classified as a true, prototypical number one wide receiver. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. So Bears general manager Ryan Poles may have pulled off one of the most underappreciated deals in Bears history. Might not have even known it at the time if your name is Ryan Poles. So this has all kind of worked out well. They made a couple of trades, moved a couple of picks, but now they get not only the number one pick in this year's draft, but they also were able to keep their first round selection that they owned because they traded a player for the pick, and not they did not trade for picks. So instead of swapping first round picks as part of the deal, they actually were able. So they've got two picks in the top 10. That will because to me, where the draft is won or lost is basically in the first three rounds. That's where you're going to impact your football team.
Sure.
Get the right guys in the right places of need. And if you, because in the first three rounds, if you get a guy that outproduces his draft selection, he's going to be a guy that maybe could be a Pro Bowler, right? I mean, generally Pro Bowlers come from the top 15 to 20 picks. So if you get a guy in the second round that can be good enough to maybe be a potential Pro Bowler, you have scored with that second round pick. So to me, it's the first three rounds that really make the difference. And the Bears were able to swap around some deals. They got plenty of picks. They also have prime picks with two in the top 10. I like what Ryan Poles pulled off. And getting rid of DJ Moore, yeah, it's a talented wide receiver. But
we've seen you can get wide receivers in the draft. So,
but they're sitting there at number nine, and if they want a wide receiver, they can get one.
They sure can.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up, Indiana adds to their roster what is still missing. Of course, the big news of the weekend, Connor Essejian has chosen Nebraska as his landing spot. He made that announcement yesterday on social media, and he'll be going to Lincoln, hopefully to fill the roster spot of Keisei Tominaga. And Luke Goody today, the former Homestead product, put his name in the portal. So, you know, Luke Goody's going to be a guy that's looking for a new home.
Yeah. Luke Goody had a, you know, actually a very good career there at Illinois with the Fighting Illini. So, and they had a, you know, a decent tournament run and a Big Ten tournament. You know, they were the second best behind Purdue. So, yeah.
Everybody wants to put Luke Goody at Indiana. In fact, we had a text saying it's pretty much a done deal. That's kind of the, and I can't call it a report, but the rumor that I'm hearing is this is a move for Luke Goody to go to IU as a grad student. He will be a grad transfer getting his degree at Illinois, and You know, when you look at the profile for Luke Goody under bio, you get Luke Goody's uncle is Indiana football legend Trent Green. Goody's dad and two uncles all played football at IU. Goody's cousin Matt played football at IU. Goody's brother is currently a student at IU. And remember, Luke Goody used to be a quarterback. Well, Indiana's got about four of those right now. I guess he's not going to play two sports.
No.
But there'll be plenty of company that he will be keeping if he does go to Indiana. So it would not surprise me at all. And all that has to happen is maybe go get a visit and get it wrapped up fairly quickly. By next weekend, he could probably be an Indiana Hoosier. Of course, we'll go through some of the moves that the Hoosiers have made and some of the needs they still have as they've got roster spots available. I've got a little bit of a problem with what they've put together right now. You know, roster construction is very important to me.
Yeah.
That it's not just about assembling talent, but it's putting talent together that will match and flow and provide multiple different weapons that can do different things to help your ball club. And they're getting some lookalikes. You know, they've got Malik Renew and Umar Balo, who are two bigs. I don't know if either one is a huge threat from behind the three-point line. Maybe Malik Renew can become that, but Balo is not going to be that guy that is a stretch four or a stretch five. And so, you know, the whole five-out type of offense where you play five around the perimeter, probably not going to happen. Balo is going to clog the middle with pick and rolls and different things where he posts up. But that means Renew has to be pretty good at the four to be able to step outside and stretch the floor. I don't know if he's that guy. And then you've got Mbako, who in a spread offense would be a perfect four-man, but he's probably going to have to play the three. Now you're crowded at guard. And what have you got? You've got a roster with a ton of guards. What does that mean as far as getting a shooter? We'll talk a little bit about that. Scott Agnes joins us on the other side. We'll talk about what happened with the Pacers and how they can get this series turned around. He joins us next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Tin Caps back home this week. Start a six-game series against Great Lakes Loons tomorrow night at Parkview Field. Of course, game times on Tuesday and Wednesday will be 6:30. Thursday and Friday, 7 o'clock, and then 1:05 on Saturday and Sunday. Get your tickets at tincaps.com. And if you can't make it to the ballpark, you can always listen to every Tin Caps game, the broadcast right here on your home for Tin Caps Baseball, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Also coming up tomorrow night, right after the Tin Caps wrap up, we will be joining the Pacers in progress as they'll be involved in Game 2 at Milwaukee. And Game 1 is kind of one to forget. Scott Agnes will give us some details. He's joining us right now on the guest line. And Scott, explain the first half for me. What did you see? Was it a team that was scared? Was it a team that was passive? What was it about that first half where the Pacers dug themselves a huge hole?
Yeah, good afternoon, Brett. It felt like a kid on the first few minutes of Christmas, just going belligerent, right? Just going all over, doesn't know how to contain the excitement. I'm here, I'm there. Where's the crowd? Oh, I'm just going to do it myself. they were just playing outside of themselves for that first quarter. That was the biggest concern for this bunch. Then after that, they settled down, but then it was a 24-4 run. And I thought reality sunk in a little bit for the Pacers team. They lacked size defending. Damian Lillard, a guy who's been there, done that, not only repeated something he's done, but he also had the best first half he's ever done in the postseason. And the experience level is just so strikingly different. And I thought ultimately we saw the Pacers a little bit overachieve during that in-season tournament, regular season. And now with the Bucks in the postseason, you can tell they have been there before, and even without Giannis, they were absolutely always going to be a problem.
You know, when you look at Tyrese Halliburton, I mentioned this last week, I felt like this was his series to take a next step up the ladder for players in the NBA, because I think there's a different credibility or respect given for those that up their game during the playoffs. And so I thought playing a team that's from his home state. He'll be inspired. He's played well against Milwaukee this year. And how do you explain seven shots? I mean, was he passive? Because I thought we saw the other side of it with Lillard. He was aggressive. He was going to come out and get his shots and try to have an immediate impact on this basketball game, where Tyrese Halliburton ends up with just seven shots for the entire contest.
Yeah, and really, I'm putting it at six, because one of them was when it was already over. It was in the final minute when you're just tossing up threes, trying to get anything. So that's the number I've been using. Six field goal attempts in a game like this, not nearly enough. And I have been displeased a little bit, Brett, with what I've been hearing just from him in general here, saying the fact that, I just got to be better. It's as simple as that. No, there's a lot more specifics to that. And I would like for him to kind of share what he was seeing or what he felt. It's hard for you to, for any of us to say what he was feeling or experiencing, because, by the way, it wasn't just a new experience for the Pacers as a whole, the first playoff game in 4 years, but also Tyrese. And so I don't think he felt any jitters from just what I saw. I think he saw a guy like Dame go off. I think he was defended tough. Patrick Beverley is just a pain in the you-know-what. And I think, to his credit, in the first quarter, he tries to ease into this thing. If anything, he went over the top in trying to not get too giddy like many of his teammates to get going. But then it was only a 9-point game after one, but he never settled into being that offensive player that the Pacers want. And the other challenge in Halliburton's game there is he thrives on the run. He thrives in transition and throwing alley-oops and going against smaller defenders. Well, he doesn't really see that against this Bucks team. They only had four fast break points in that first half, meaning they didn't get at all to their pace or their playing style. Now, if you can correct that a little bit, that's encouraging for the Pacers. But he needs to attempt 15 shots, something like that, per game. He doesn't need 24 like Damian Lillard, but it was Pascal Siakam essentially holding up the team on his own in game one.
42 points in the first half. Pacers do up it to 53 points, or 53 in the second half. What was different, and what could the Pacers take from the second half and apply it to game two?
I think just how they settled in and how you have to play. I mean, this is just so elementary, right? Like, you're probably laughing in the studio here. But I think the couple takeaways, if anything, is just, the details matter. What's something they've been emphasizing all year? The hard play matters. And then the other thing I think they started to get into was letting Pascal do his thing. And I think it's important moving forward, and I think we saw that in the second half, Brett, where one of Tyrese and Pascal has to be on the floor at all times. We didn't see that in the first half. We did in the second. The second thing is, the only way I think this Pacers team can be effective offensively is, one, if they're either letting Tyrese work Miles Turner in a pick-and-roll 1-5 situation, or you give it to Siakam and play make out of that, or if we see the offense and Rick Carlisle get a little bit more creative here and say, hey, look, we don't have guys that can match up defensively, we don't have the size, we know Dame can kind of go off, we need to limit Dame, and then on the other side, maybe you play a lineup that is just all in on the offensive end and say, all right, we're going to just have to outscore them here just because we know we're going to beat in these several other departments.
Talking to Scott Agnes from the Fieldhouse Files about the Pacers game one loss to the Milwaukee Bucks, 109-94. Game two comes up tomorrow night at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. Giannis, what is his status? Did the result from game one, does that impact whether we will or won't see him, or do you think it's irrelevant?
I think it's irrelevant right now, and I say that because there hasn't been any notable update in what Giannis, where he's at or what he has been able to do. Thus far, what we know is that he's been able to do little work on the court. I had Sean Sharani on my podcast over the weekend before game one, and he was talking about how there's just been very little updates, and he's just done a little bit of work. And so what that tells me in covering a team is that he's at least a week away, because you need to ramp things up, because you need to go through a couple practices or shoot-arounds, ideally. On top of that, you might mentally think, all right, got game one, so you can afford to sit him out for another game. I think the thinking here, though, is if he's not comfortable, you don't want to put him out there, because we all immediately think about, right, like Kevin Durant, where he had a calf strain that led to an Achilles tear. You want to take the ultimate precautions when you're dealing with a franchise guy like Giannis. Although, yes, it's fantastic for them that they got through game one without any problems.
You still have some young players that mix in with this group for the Indiana Pacers, and Rick Carlisle had some pretty sharp words about the basketball team and how they performed in game one. Has that been normal for Carlisle? I haven't heard him be quite that sharp in describing a game this year.
Yeah, he has when it's been called upon. And so many times, it's a repetitive story, because it's all about that first quarter. They have gotten to so many bad starts this season that's why it wasn't surprising. That's why it was kind of a positive, if anything, that they were only down by 9 after one. It felt more like a 20-point game, I feel like, by that point. And so for him to say, yeah, this was an embarrassing performance, I don't know what that first half was in particular, that is something that Rick has done this season when it has been called upon. And the other thing that he has continued to do this season is, when asked about individuals' offensive performances, that's one thing he does not single out. If Miles goes off for 32, when he went off for 32, he goes, hey, look, we know he's a good scorer, we need the other things. Now, on the other side, when Tyrese only attempts 7 shots yesterday, he deflects and go, hey, look, this is not a Tyrese thing, this is a Pacers thing, this is all of us. So he kind of aligned to what he has done the rest of the season.
8-0 for home teams over the first weekend. Have you checked record books, you know, while you're just kind of sitting with nothing to do? Have you looked back to figure out when did this last happen? Any idea?
Last happened in 2013, I believe, at least since 2000. This is only the third time. I've seen 2004, 2013, and then this year. So it's been striking. I for sure expected the two teams that played in the play-in game most recently to lose, like we saw with New Orleans, and Miami got drilled. But to see this kind of dominance, where it feels like home court advantage in general has somewhat been neutralized to like a 57% winning percentage, rather than like you would think it'd be like 75%, but no, it's not that glaring. That's what made the 8-0 record this past weekend so notable.
All right, so of teams that are down 0-1 looking to get a split on the road, let's talk about some of the teams that lost. Lakers, of course, I don't think we're shocked by that, but I thought Dallas and Phoenix would have better showings, both lost by double digits, and of course the Pacers lose by 15. Who has the best shot to even up their series before they leave town?
I would go with Orlando would be one of them, and then I think Dallas would be the other one among the games. Of course, you have Orlando at Cleveland tonight. That's that NBA TV game that the Pacers will have tomorrow. But you saw in these games so much where the size and physicality won out. Same was true in the Pacers-Bucks game. They had the length, they had the athleticism, the size, and the Bucks won out there. I'm not trusting a Philly just because of Joel Embiid's situation. Mm-hmm. We've seen the Lakers lose 9 in a row to Denver. And while the consensus might be, all right, they're due, the matchup just tremendously favors Denver. So I don't see that changing. Phoenix, much like Philly, I've never really trusted. Dallas, to me, Brett, was the most troubling questionable game over the week, and I did not see a blowout there coming, especially when you had the performances that you got from Kyrie and Luka.
Scott, always appreciate you and look forward to your coverage. Game 2 comes up tomorrow night. Fieldhouse Files, if you don't have your subscription, now would be a great time. Scott, have a great one.
Likewise. Appreciate it, Brett.
Yep, that is Scott Agnes joining us here on the Sports Rush. We'll take a quick time out. Portal news. Of course, you've got Connor Asesian deciding where he's going, and another local high school product, a former high school product here in Fort Wayne, is announced he's leaving where he's at. And it's a Big Ten school. Will he go to another Big Ten school? We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. It's an adventure.
We're navigating uncharted waters.
Well, what we didn't know is we got Scott Agnes on the line, and then find out we've got some phone issues here that are being worked on by the phone service provider.
Yes.
And so, little choppy, but we were able to get through it. So, for those of you that want to sit there, what are they doing? It had nothing to do. We could not control it, but we braved it. I thought we did pretty well with it, and I thought we could understand what he was saying. A little choppy there at first, but then it was easier.
And I did get a message. We did have a little bit of feedback there for Scott. So, just want to appreciate him sticking through that, the feedback as well.
The echo.
Yeah, shout out to Scott.
Yeah, the phone lines have been getting worked on, and sometimes when an outside provider comes in and they work on something that we're accessing. So, yeah, we're grinding through. For those that don't know, earlier today we told you we're in the closet box, known as the 1380 The Fan studio. Normally we have our own studio across the hall that is much more spacious, but they're having some technical issues as we count down to the move to the new building.
Yeah.
We're excited about that.
We are. I'm looking forward to it.
And, you know, don't tell anybody. I pulled a plug back there to try to hurry it up. And so far, the engineers haven't found it. No, but we've got the big dogs all here working.
Yeah, we certainly do.
And we had to come over here. Of course, no problem for us to jump over to our former home. You never actually had this as a former
home. No, I've never had to produce the Sports Rush in here, but we're making it work, Brett.
Absolutely. Monday edition. Always appreciate you. And don't forget, if you miss any of the Sports Rush, want to catch up, we are always available 24/7 on our podcast page. You can find it wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Just simply search for Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Find it by name and make sure you like, review, subscribe, do all that fun stuff, and never miss a bit of the show. You can always catch up to whatever you miss. You know, somehow we got to get Ryan on that, because Ryan still hasn't, you know, he always tells us when he's not going to be able to listen.
Yeah.
Or and if we appreciate the feedback that he's like, you know, not going to be able to listen, got an important meeting to go to or whatever. But Ryan, I do hope you use the podcast to catch up with whatever it is you miss, because chances are it's going to be very valuable information that you can't live without coming from us here on the Sports Rush.
Well, we've already lost him for tonight, so he might not have heard that message.
Big news in the golf world. Oh. Scottie Scheffler has won again. Yeah, it's only happened like four times in the last month.
Does he do anything else?
He is a machine. He is, he is the machine right now.
That's a good nickname.
He's like Albert Pujols when Pujols – remember when Pujols was the machine in the sports – this is Sports Center promo?
That was good.
Yeah. That right now they should do the same promo with Scott Scheffler.
Just dominating.
Blowing everybody. I mean, nobody can compete with him right now.
Crazy.
And what did he win, by 5 or 6 shots? I mean, it wasn't even that close.
Yeah, I'll find out here for you.
And the entire golf world is praying for his wife to go into labor soon.
That still hasn't happened.
No, he was able to stick it out another week after winning the Masters. And I guess she was not due for 2 weeks when the Masters. So now she's down to like the last week before her due date. And so I assure you, the golfers are all talking in the golfers' locker room about his wife getting into labor and getting him off the course so they can have a chance to win right now, because he's been pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, at the RBC Heritage here, he won by 19 under. Second place was 16 under.
So it was only a 3-shot.
Only 3.
Oh, only 3. yeah, I think he went the first 3 days, never had a bogey on the card. Now, he did have a double bogey, but he didn't have a bogey on his card. He had one double bogey. Nothing else. Everything.
You should use that. You know, I went golfing. I didn't have any bogeys.
Never had a bogey.
Had a triple and
never bogey. Never doubled. Yeah, and they were all triples and quadruples. That's pretty much my golf game, Adam. I have a golf game pretty consistent with your 3-point shot.
Oh, so. Come on now.
46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Connor Asesian, who had some visits. And I don't think that there was high interest from Indiana. Normally you get a sense of who Indiana really wants. And I think who Indiana really wanted was Carlisle and Rice. And they got both of them. But I think if they're looking for a shooter, they might be looking for a bigger shooter, and there are some. But when you look at their roster construction right now, this is a team that is loaded with guards. They filled three spots. They still need shooters. Right now, it would not be difficult for another team to either play zone or play a sagging man-to-man with an overside help commitment where they just pack the paint and they take away the drives, they take away the post, and they dominate on the glass because you have nobody that's going to spread the defense. I mean, here's the guys you would project as potential starters with Balo, Renew, Mbako, Rice, and Carlisle. And none of them are big-time three-point shooters. Now, off the bench, you'd have Galloway, Leal, Cups, Ja'Kai Newton. What, you know, I have no idea what to expect out of Ja'Kai Newton.
Yeah.
Redshirted last year. And then you'd have Bryson Tucker, of course, one of their top recruits. He would probably, he's pretty much in the same mold as what you find with Rice and Carlisle. But if you look at their roster, they got a couple of bigs, they got Mbako, and then they got tons of guards.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got like seven guards. Huh. And if you play a true five in Balo, a four with Renew, if you try to play those two on the court together, that makes Mbako your three. That means you've got two true guard spots, and you've got seven guys to fight for those two spots.
Yeah, it's just kind of a logjam.
And you've still got to be able to recruit a shooter.
Right.
And those are generally more guards than anything else.
Yeah, and it's you make it more difficult on yourself to recruit one of these if one of these guards, especially if you're going to try and sell them on any potential playing time.
Now I look at a couple of guys that maybe could play the three, maybe the four. Zach Anderson's a guy who he's either visiting today or just completed a visit, a 6'7 guy out of Florida Gulf Coast. I think that he would be a perfect fit to complement this roster. Not only is he 6'7", but he's big enough that he can battle in that 3-4 range with the small forward or power forward. Last year he was 51 of 111 from three-point land. He hit 46% of his threes. Now, he averages 12.8 points per game, and he's much more than just a three-point shooter because only 35% of his shots were three-point shots. So it's not Jack Golke.
No.
It's, you know, he's a 6'7 small forward that is skilled inside, outside. And I think he would be a great get to kind of complement the roster because at this point, it's not about the stars. It's not about getting the, you know, the guy that's ranked in the top 10 among the transfers available. What it is now, it's in completing your roster because you've got Balo, who was in some counts the number one guy available in the portal. You got Rice. You got Carlisle. You know, you got some of the top names. Now it's how do I complete this roster and fill in the voids with what we're going to need to be successful next year? And you're going to need that 6'7 guy. Now, a guy that's also about 6'7 that can really shoot it, but I do think he's going to be going to UNC, at least the crystal ball.
Oh, the Wizards.
Is going to UNC is Cade Tyson. You've heard me mention him a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
6'7 shooter from the outside out of Belmont. Definitely not a four man. He's more of a two or a three. He's either a shooting guard or a wing shooter, that would be, your shooting guard or your small forward, but a 6'7 guy at a Belmont. Love to see somehow the crystal ball be wrong, but it was looking very favorable that he was going to be going to UNC.
Well, speaking of UNC's rival, the Duke Blue Devils, they picked up a player in the transfer portal today.
Didn't they? I think we know who he is.
We might.
Out of Purdue University.
Yeah.
Mason Gillis is going to be a Blue. And Duke got hit hard on the portal.
They lost
9 scholarship players to the NBA and the transfer portal?
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, they got wiped out. But Mason Gillis to the rescue, heading to Durham and taking a spot on the Duke Blue Devils. He announced his commitment earlier today. And also Luke Goody from Illinois announced mm-hmm. he's transferring.
Yeah.
As a grad transfer out of the Fighting Illini. And, again, the crystal ball starting to come into focus.
A couple people on the text line are very convinced that he's already set to come to Indiana.
Yeah, very convinced. They've connected the dots, and there's a lot of dots that connect in Bloomington.
Absolutely.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We'll take a break. We'll come back Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You know who had a good weekend? Tin Caps. Got the job done in Dayton. Four straight, the Tin Caps have won, and all four on the road at Day Air Ballpark against a Dayton team that many think is the most talented roster in all of minor league baseball. Stole that from John Nolan, heard it on the broadcast this weekend. So just to prove to John that I was listening to the games, I was watching and listening to John's audio.
Awesome.
I told you that last week,
yep.
That I got it synced up within about a half second or a second,
yeah.
And was able to watch the games while listening to John Nolan on the call with Jack Gordon, also who joined him over the weekend. But the Tin Caps have been doing some bashing, especially in the later innings. Like I said earlier in the show, last three games, over the first three innings, they were outscored 9-1. So they found themselves down multiple runs in all three games. And then they outscored Dayton 16-2 from the fourth inning on. And that was enough to get three straight victories, including yesterday's extra inning affair. Tin Caps got the win 5-3 in 10. So a lot of fun with Tin Caps baseball, and that means get out to the ballpark and enjoy this team while you can. Ethan Salas, never know how long he'll be here. This is your chance to see the Tin Caps and maybe even get some autographs on Autograph Day on Sundays with Midwest Box Breaks. Big thanks to Scott Agnes for joining the show. I'm just enjoying the music right now.
A little hot-blooded.
Yeah. It's the way Foreigner wrapped up their show, although the new Foreigner. Miss Journey. Have a great Monday night. We're back tomorrow 4 to 6 with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.